walk into this room at your own risk. Because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has refinements, technological advances.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your host, Tom Metzger.
Oh. And this is Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern Steakhouse and our giant and growing salvage yard of weapons of mass destruction. Got them coming in here from all over the place, man. Selling them out cheap, 10 cents on the dollar. Yeah. Anyhow, it's the 22nd of November, 2014, Saturn's Day. And it's a wet day. It was a wet yesterday, and it's wet today, but it's up around 44 degrees, and that's better than the snow. The snow's all gone. So we'll get ready for our next snow blizzard. Yeah, this one was sort of small, yeah. Well, it's Saturday, and it's time for Sling Blade. And like I've told you before, we've got a lot of Sling Blade shows that have not been played. And unfortunately, when Sling Blade put them together, he didn't put dates on the cassettes and so forth. So there's some things on these tapes that are dated or don't exist anymore, so things like that. So some of the phone numbers that are put on there are not around anymore. So anyhow, other than that, it's great stuff. It's time to go with him now. Let's see. Sling Blade, are you ready? Hello?
Earlier this week, I heard an old Clint Eastwood saying that, when he said that there are two types of people in the world, those with guns and those that dig. That line came from The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. My version is far more truthful and true. In this world, there are two kinds of people. Those with guns and those that obey people with guns. Never forget that. That's the reason governments stay in power, no matter how evil they are. Just like ours. And yet you fools continue to let the damn liberals whittle away at your right to bear arms. Piecemeal at a time, month by month, state by state, year by year, until there won't be any left, and then our government will be free to do whatever it wants with us because we will no longer have the right or the power to stop them, and that's exactly what their goal is. I'll tell you what, when they do collect the guns, I'll tell you who's still going to have guns. That's the Bloods, the Crips, MS-13. They'll still have them. You have a duty to fight these restrictions with every tool at your disposal and by any means possible. You are preventing a total and permanent loss of all our freedoms and rights. And people, it's coming. Unless you get off your lazy ass, your lazy, cowardly ass, and stop worrying about who you're going to piss off and start worrying about who is going to enslave you and your family. It doesn't matter how you feel about guns. The point's mute. The point's moot. M-O-O-T. Not mute. Moot. Because guns are a very necessary part of our survival. Guns bought our freedom. Guns won every war. Guns stop killers from roaming our streets. Guns keep governments from turning tyrants. We need them. They are a necessary evil because we cannot negotiate with evil. Thousands of very dead politicians can attest to this. You can only use force to either control it or kill it. Don't worry about getting into trouble by fighting these monsters. Worry about the trouble you'll be in soon if you don't. Because it'll be 100 times worse than anything they can do to you at the present. And it'll never be never ending. Marble mouth error. Imagine a world where you have no rights whatsoever. A world where you have absolutely no value and no say about anything. A place where you're just another ant in the hive. Disposable, expendable, valueless. Take away our power to stop them, and this is exactly what will happen. Far, far better to have the power and never have to use it than to need the power and not have it. You think about that. Think hard. Every street corner are clusters of either, wait, you near your home or just about, you near your home and on just about every street corner are clusters of either blacks or wetbacks. Loitering aimlessly. Oh, okay. This is the third part of the American dream. Okay. Well, that's on the other side, this guy. Sorry. Wish I wouldn't have got rid of it, but I did. There it goes. Here's the third part of the American dream. It's on the flip side of this tape, on side A. You near your home, and on just about every street corner are clusters of either blacks or wetbacks loitering uselessly, glaring at every white that drives by with a malice in their eyes that can only be mistaken by fools. It reminds you of some third world country where there is no law, only death and crime. All around them are boarded up shops and stores whose walls are covered with vile graffiti, who are all run out of business by shoplifting muds and vandalism. Plus the fact that their paying white customers have long gone. Left for whiter and greener pastures. Whiter and cleaner pastures. None of them dare say that they hate darkies, but they've all moved to get away from these animals. Sometimes actions speak louder than words. And the muds try to follow them, like ticks chasing a deer through the woods. Whites are their natural prey. They feed on whitey's ability to produce, and with them they bring their liberal politicians, who will also move in and demand that whitey resume paying for their worthless presence, until whitey pays up and moves again, and so it continues. You finally arrive back home and put away your stuff. You sit down in front of the tube and try to open a beer, but you notice your hands are shaking too badly to get the grip on the pull tab. You sit it on the coffee table and turn to the tube. A big, gargoyle-looking coon stares back at you with a hateful glare, demanding no more rights. Oh, okay. Demanding more rights, as in more rights, but it says more rights. You turn off the set and the lamp and sit there in the dark, shaking as the thrum of the air conditioner becomes the only sound in a room. Something deep and disturbing is gnawing at your soul. Strange, long dormant feelings and emotions are boiling inside you. But you can't put a finger on them. You're weak and sick to your stomach and wish it to go away, but somehow you know that it's only going to get worse. A lot worse. That's because you've identified the strongest emotion among them. It's called rage. Each one of you out there should be feeling some rage. As our race goes the way of the dinosaur with every passing year, maybe we're stifled into inactivity because we end up watching some latest blockbuster Hollywood movie where they have blacks who pass for very honorable people. Maybe you turn on TBS the other night and caught that movie Hitch with Will Smith and Kevin James. Kevin James, the loser whitey guy who can't hook up with Cameron Diaz. It's funny how she was at the Hispanic Music Awards or whatever. Can't get no more Aryan than fucking Cameron Diaz, but yet, you know, I guess she wants to be Hispanic, but, you know, you watch movies like Hitch, and you think, wow, black people are just like white people. If you're not careful, movies like that are meant really to pacify white people. I'm not saying that's their only purpose. That's the result of these movies. The purpose of these movies is to show the togetherness and the natural brotherhood of man that's the Jew system is trying to push on us. And we've fallen for hook, line, and sinker. But we're losing. We're losing it all. Let's read some Yahoo Mail here. It is about the Mahan update. Lawyers want bombing suspects moved. Lawyers for two alleged white supremacists charged in a 2004 bombing that injured a black city official in Scottsdale want their clients moved from a county jail to a federal prison because they say that the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office violated their rights. Twin brothers Dennis and Daniel Mahan are being held at the county's 4th Avenue Jail. The brothers are charged in a bombing on February 26, 2004, when a package detonated in the hands of detonated in the hands of Don Logan, Scottsdale diversity director, at the time injuring his hand and arm and hurting a secretary. Dennis Mahan's lawyer, Deborah Williams, said in the court filing December 11th that sheriff's deputies have repeatedly denied her clients access to pertinent documents in his case and violated attorney-client privilege by reading them. Everyone charged with a crime has the right to view the prosecution's documents, also known as discovery, so they can properly defend themselves. The brothers, who were arrested on 25th of June at their home in Davis Junction, Illinois, are charged with conspiracy to damage buildings and property by means of explosives. Authorities found assault weapons, hundreds of rounds of ammunition, and white supremacist material in the home. You know, we all know this story, but, you know, I kind of want to read this because I always want to do what I can to pull the veil away from our eyes that there's a thing called fair justice in America. You may say, oh, yeah, I know, but I always want to remind you. I want to beat you over the head with it. I wish I had David Lane's Damned, Deceived, and Defiant. I'd like to read you some stuff out of that book. Yeah. I'd like to read you some of the stuff out of that book about what David Lane went through at the hands of the FBI. The paid witnesses who bared false witness against him. All kind of shenanigans that the judge and the prosecutor pulled. They can get away with that. It's Whitey, but, you know, I guess Jesse Jackass wouldn't allow that to happen to some useless street black. The brothers have pleaded not guilty. U.S. District Judge David Campbell is scheduled to decide on Thursday whether to move the brothers from the jail to a federal prison in Florence, about 50 miles southeast of Phoenix. When Williams went to the jail on November 24th, Williams said deputies wouldn't let her give the discovery to Dennis Mahan because it had references to guns. When she went back in December 11th, after reluctantly agreeing to remove these references, she said they still wouldn't let her give the discovery to Dennis, citing references in it to white supremacists. After a discussion, Williams said that the supervisor told her that Dennis could only review the 5,000 pages of discovery in person with Williams, not keep the documents himself. Sheriff spokesman Lieutenant Brian Lee said jail personnel did initially deny Dennis access to documents because of security concerns over references to guns and white supremacists. But the head of the jail allowed Dennis to have the discovery. After he filed a complaint. Williams did not return repeated calls for comment about whether her client now has a discovery. Paul Bender, a law professor at Arizona State University, specializing in U.S. and Arizona constitutional law, said that he was troubled that Dennis Mahan was denied access to the discovery, even if he has it now. It's wrong, he said. they may, and I've experienced this myself, by giving the lawyer a hard time, they may really be worried about contraband. If so, that's fine. But if they're doing it just to be interfering or getting in the way and making it harder for the lawyer, that's not unusual. Jail personnel do that. Think about it. Jail personnel do that. Why? Their only job is to be basically a human warehouse. Why would they care about the outcome of a trial? They need to be the most impartial people in the system. Meanwhile, Daniel Mahan's lawyer said her client has always been able to keep the 5,000-page discovery in his cell, but also wants him moved to Florence prison because he was subjected to torment and an intimidation tactic. Lawyer Barbara Hall, now this is, I hope I got all the pages of this. Okay, 2 of 2, great. Laura Barbara Hall, H-U-L-L, said in a court filing December 24th that an unidentified deputy went in Daniel's cell, questioned him about the content of the discovery, and told him that he had no right to have it in his cell. Hall said Daniel told the deputy that he had requested boxes for the documents in hope that they didn't pose a problem. This officer told Mr. Mahan as he left his cell, "Boxes are the least of your problems. You're in big trouble," Hall wrote. Mr. Mahan's participation in his defense requires that he have ready access to those documents without further interference, let alone further purposeful intimidation by sheriff's deputies or staff. Experience tells us that this type of treatment of Mr. Mahan will likely continue. Lee said no complaint about such an incident was filed, and therefore the department wouldn't have investigated it or have any record of it if it did happen. Hall did not return repeated calls for comment. Bender said it's unlikely a judge would order an inmate moved to a different detention center based on one isolated remark, but would be more likely to issue such an order if there was constant torment. You know what? This is just par for the course on what we go through, what our guys go through in the system. Yet you guys still want to play by the rules, huh? You must. You must want to play by the rules. I'll tell you what. There's a lot of white people who need their ass handed to them in a major way. More so than any brain dead white out there. Remember on side 2 or side A of this tape, I read a little bit from The Devil's Advocate, and the main character, Andrew Durant, when he was being driven to another facility, possibly for more torturing, looked on the streets and saw the sheeple scurrying along in their raggedy clothes, with the look of submissiveness on their face, which was by law they had to have on their face. They weren't allowed to frown or snarl at any guards or anything like that, or any roving police personnel. But they had to have this mild, machine-like look of submissiveness on their face. And Andrew Durant hated them. He just felt hatred for them because they were sheep. And here there were Minutemen, activists, taking it to the system's ass for them. But they don't care. Now, you can kind of understand their fear about that because they live under a repressive regime and they're afraid of being labeled a collaborator or anything like that. We don't live under an oppressive regime yet. The regime we live under is a wolf in sheep's clothing. It hasn't bore its fangs yet. But we can't get no support anywhere. In fact, you know when the John Birch Society had all their meetings and other quasi-racialist organizations, anti-communist organizations, when they had all their meeting places back in the 60s, they used to meet all over the place. In Arkansas, in Hamburg, New York, in Iowa, all kinds of places. You know what? Their places were never firebombed. They were never protested by the Reds and the ARA or whatever, you know, pro-race-destroying organization they had back then. And they had them. But they didn't cause any problems. Now we've gotten to a point now where we can't even have a concert or a get-together without being harassed by not only law enforcement, but ARA. The gig is up and doing things the same way over and over again. It is an exercise in futility. And if you don't want to acknowledge that, well, that's pretty sorry. Because this is a pipe dream. If you think that we're going to make any headway in this country doing the same old things that we've done. Time for me to read out of the magisterial Which Way Western Man. Start off here when it says, it is as a result of this attitude that we witnessed a well-attested and intense conservatism of the great majority of men. Every healthy people has hated and feared and resisted the constant readjustment necessitated by continual change. When change goes beyond a certain point, it causes what has been called culture shock, even though it be sanctified as progress. A people can no more thrive under it than can a tree that is planted one place today, only to find itself dug up and planted somewhere else tomorrow. And that's a perfect description of white people. We're rootless. Hell, well, a lot of white people don't even see America as their country anymore. How many white Americans in this country say, oh, I can't go in that area, man, I'll get killed. But they can go, black and brown can go all through a white neighborhood. At the very worst, maybe a cop will call the police, or maybe a resident will call the police and say, hey, there's some black guy out in the neighborhood casing the joint, I think. You know, that could be the worst thing to happen to them. But he doesn't have to fear any violence. Thousands of places in this country where white people cannot walk through. But nobody wants to start handing it to their ass. I'm amazed. I really am. It would seem thus far we ought not to be in agreement. But it may be that some of my readers will reject my statement of the end for which any significant society must exist. If so, the difference between us might be traceable to our different reading of history, a difference that it might be mutually helpful to explore. But I suspect that it would spring rather from a difference of taste. And here is a gulf that cannot be bridged. He who can face either his own life or that of his kind without an ineluctable concern for quality, without an insatiable desire and a relentless demand that it ever go upward, by that one fact immediately places himself, to my way of thinking, in the class of mass man or mob, of those whose every word and every look and bearing reveal that they lust only after comfort and security and pleasure, and who resent and eat and ever ask to be excused from any demand upon them for self-discipline or for austerity of living. Not too many white people want to sacrifice for the race today. Definitely not. It's all about me. It's all about my comfort, my entertainment. Alright. The stage of civilization was thus overfilled with massive newcomers who arrived with such suddenness that the cultural institutions of society were unable to assimilate them, and in such millions that their very numbers created a power pressure that was proved irresistible. They swarm everywhere and occupy places formerly belonging only to the elite of one sort or another, not because of any superiority of character or intelligence or even of mere training, but solely because of the sheer mass of weight. It has been what Rathenau called the vertical invasion of the barbarians. Probably it was a phenomenon unprecedented in history. And that was the booming populations in Europe in the 19th century with the industrialization. That was when Europe went from a century of from between 1800 and 1914, the population leaped from 180 million to 460 million. So, and even though I would rather have that happen, I would rather deal with that. You know, I believe that something superior can come of the mass white man. There will be noble white men to come forth from them. Even though I believe that we need to breed quality. But we need a massive dying off of non-whites. We really do. I hate to say that. I hate the way I sound when I say that. But I can't see nothing else. Otherwise our race is gone. There's no other place on this planet we can go. Going on, it says, such was the status of democracy in the eyes of the thoughtful men on the eve of the French Revolution. For at least 17 centuries, there had been an all but universal movement toward kingship, says Henry Sumner Maine, whose title to speak with authority could hardly be surpassed. And this is something Henry Sumner Maine wrote. The opinion that democracy was irresistible and inevitable and probably perpetual would have appeared in the late 18th century a wild paradox. There have been more than 2,000 years of tolerably well-ascertained political history, and at its outset, monarchy, aristocracy, and democracy were all plainly discernible. The result of a long experience was that some monarchies and some aristocracies had shown themselves extremely tenacious of life, but the democracies, which had risen and perished, or had fallen into extreme insignificance, seemed to show that this form of government was a rare occurrence in political history and was characterized by an extreme fragility, meaning being fragile, especially when an empire or civilization is in its golden years, or not the waning years, meaning it's in decline. Whenever the government of the many had been tried, it has ultimately produced monsters and morbid forms of government by the one, or of the government by the few. Government of the one meaning a dictatorship, or government of the few meaning an oligarchy. But, Christianity would have never taken hold in the early days of the Roman Empire, when it wasn't such a big empire, when it didn't encompass so much of the Mediterranean. And when Rome did conquer all the known world around the Mediterranean, it brought in a lot of non-whites. And there's even eugenics movements that took place in Rome where they tried to get the racial stock of the Roman people to start breeding more, because the browns and the lower dregs of society were outbreeding them. And when the empire was dying, it was in that time when Christianity grew out of the sewers of Rome, the catacombs. All these different Christian sects, S-E-C-T-S, you know, vying for supremacy, you know. The Gnostics, the Marcion Christians, you know. But anyways, I mean, look at America now. Look at how democracy is it's almost a word with religious zeal now. More so now than ever was back in the 1800s. I mean, in fact, I don't even think democracy was used that much. But the character of man has definitely changed, like I read in an earlier passage on the other side of this tape. We are not the same type of men who saw the beginning of the last century. White men at the beginning of the last century were a lot more hardy, a lot more virile, a lot more unapologetic about who they were. They were a lot more manly. And perverted type of white people, they were way in the closet. They would never show themselves or what they were. Continue now. There's one feature of democracy's record that, in the view of the modern situation, calls for more attention. It is commonly assumed that democracy is opposed to dictatorship, but nothing is farther from the facts. The history of democracy makes it unmistakable that some form of one-man tyranny is the end to which popular governments has always led. Athenian democracy is followed by Alexander, the French Republic by Napoleon. As Christopher Dawson remarked, the truth is, unpalatable though it may be to modern progressive thought, that democracy and dictatorship are not opposites or mortal enemies, but twin children of the Great Revolution. Democracy's very ineptitude, its very failure to solve the host of problems, has always piled up under its uncertain and wobbly hand, finally brings a nation, as our own U.S., in this 1973, to the point where it is threatened with a breakdown of all law and order and seems to stand on the very verge of dissolution. Well, if you saw that in 1973, Mr. Simpson, who died in 1991, you'd be amazed where we're at now. In such a fearsome extremity, a man on horseback is seen by the mass of the people and welcomed as the only means left of saving the country from disaster. Precisely this explains the rise of Hitler. I do not see how anyone could read such a book as Arthur Bryant's Unfinished Victory with its sympathetic apprehension of the German people's really desperate plight and not to come to recognize a strong man or another. All right. One may not like totalitarianism. I myself hate it. But if one man can put oneself in another's place and imagine what it means to have to find some way to keep afloat or die, then one is forced to face the stark fact that when it really is a matter of life or death, be it for a man or for a nation, almost any means will be seized upon if it promises them life. And law and order. And that's what we've done in this country, definitely. We'll sacrifice everything just so we can have our toys and have our Super Bowl parties, have our office parties, and not worry. We've become really soft in this country. We need to wake up. because we're not looking too good right now. And I don't say that to be melodramatic. Going on here, it says, this is untitled, an act concerning free Negroes, mulattoes, servants, and slaves. Indiana passed several laws intended to restrict the migration of African Americans into the state, but one historian has noted that such laws are more symbolic than enforceable. They provide ample evidence that the vast majority of Hoosiers had no wish to share their state with blacks. Article 13 was declared invalid in 1866. An act concerning free Negroes and mulattoes, servants and slaves, approved February 10, 1831. Section 1, be enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Indiana that from and after the first day of September next, no black or mulatto person coming or brought into the state shall be permitted to reside therein unless bond with good and sufficient security be given on behalf of such person of color to be approved by the overseers of the poor of some township in this state payable to the state of Indiana in a penal sum of $500, conditioned that such person shall not at any time become a charge to said county in which said bond shall be given, nor to any other county in the state, as also for such person's good behavior, which bond shall be filed in the clerk's office of the county where the same may be taken. And a conviction of such Negro or mulatto or any crime or misdemeanor against the penal laws of the state shall amount to forfeiture of the condition of such bond, provided that on any suit brought upon such bond for the penalty thereof, a less sum than the penalty may at the discretion of the jury trying such action be assessed against any defendants by way of damages. Well, there's blacks in the state of Indiana tearing up shit now. I mean, there's parts of Indianapolis you can't even walk through now. And there's starting to be a lot of race mixing in that state. Section 2, if any Negro or mulatto coming into the state, as foresaid, shall fail to comply with the provisions of the first section of this act, it shall be and is hereby made the duty of the overseers of the poor, if any township where such Negro or mulatto may be found, to summon him to appear before some justice of the peace to show cause why he or she or they shall not comply with the provision of this act, which summons shall be issued by the justice of the peace on the application of any overseer of the poor in this state, and shall be executed by the proper constable. And if such Negro or mulatto shall still fail to give the bond and security required by the first section of this act of being brought before such justice as aforesaid, it shall be the duty of the overseers of the poor of such township to hire such Negro or mulatto for 6 months for the best price in cash that can be had. Well, see, they're making stipulations here based on money. They should import more whites from another state if they need workers. But you can see the seeds of it here. They're making concessions in the realm of work. As long as they have a hired hand there, maybe on a farm or on a ranch or something, I guess the money manipulators of that time, even though this was written ostensibly to protect the white gene stock, even giving them a foothold in coming into the state to work was the seed of what we have now. All right, that proceeds arise from such hiring shall be paid to the county treasurer of the proper county for the use of such Negro or mulatto in such manner as will be directed by the overseers of the poor aforesaid, provided, however, that it shall be lawful for the overseers of the poor to remove such Negro or mulatto without the jurisdiction of the state, in the same manner and under the same rules and regulations are pointed out in the act of the relief of the poor, instead of hiring such Negro or mulatto out at the discretion of said overseers. Section 3, any sheriff or jailer who shall commit or suffer to be committed to prison any Negro or mulatto without a lawful mittimus, M-I-T-T-I-M-U-S, mittimus, or being otherwise authorized by law for that purpose or under the provisions of this act, shall be fined upon presentment of indictment in any sum not less than $100, not more than $500. Interesting. Section 4, should any person knowingly engage or hire or harbor such Negro or mulatto hereafter coming or being brought into this state without such colored person first complying with the provisions of this act, such person or person so offending shall pay a fine of no less than or no more than $100. To be recovered by presentment or indictment. Section 5, that the right of any person or persons to pass through this state with his or her or their Negroes or mulattoes, servant or servants, when immigrating or traveling to any other state or territory or country, make no unnecessary delay is hereby declared and secured. Revised Statutes of the State of Indiana, 1831. Article 13, Indiana Constitution of 1851, Negroes and Mulattoes. Section 1, no Negro or mulatto shall come into or settle in the state after the adoption of this Constitution. Section 2, all contracts made with any Negro or mulatto coming into the state contrary to the provisions of the foregoing section shall void and ant person, A-N-T, ant person, maybe that's a typo, who shall employ such Negro or any person, and any person who shall employ such Negro or mulatto or otherwise encourage him to remain in the state shall be fined in any sum not less than $10, nor more than $500. Section 3, all fines shall be collected for a violation of the provision of this article or of any law that may be passed for the purpose of anything or purpose of carrying the same into execution shall be set apart and appropriated for the colonialization of such Negroes or mulattoes and their descendants as may be in the state at the adoption of this Constitution and may be willing to immigrate. Wait a minute here. I see some seeds of something I don't like here. Section 3 says again, all fines which may be collected for a violation of the provisions of this article or of any law that may be passed for the purposes of carrying the same into execution shall be set apart and appropriated for the colonialization of such Negroes and mulattoes and their descendants as may be in the state at the adoption of this Constitution may be willing to immigrate. Is that where it started? Is that where they started loosening up the laws a little bit? Section 1 says no Negro or mulatto shall come in or settle into the state after the adoption of this Constitution. In the latter part of Section 3, it says, as may be in the state at the adoption of this Constitution, and may be willing to immigrate. Maybe that's possibly immigrate out of the state. Whatever. Section 4, the General Assembly shall pass laws to carry out the provision of this article. You know, you read something like that from the past. We have a tendency to think, boy, if we can only go back to those days, we would still come to what we experience today. I often engage in fruitful or fruitless fantasizing. I often fantasize about getting in a time machine, going back in time and just with modern technology and tactics. You know, can you imagine going back to the early 1900s with a modern style sniper rifle with the reticle, with the sights and the, you know, the, what is that, the M21? You know, having that type of ammo. You could take Wilson out, President Wilson out from, shit, half a mile away. Take him out, Mandel House, Untermeyer, Bernard Baruch, Paul Warburg, Louis Brandeis, who Wilson put on the Supreme Court. It's not fruitful for me to fantasize about that shit because it can never be done. What's done in the past is done, and we can't undo it. The only thing we have control over is the future. We affect the future from this time forward. If we don't do anything, we're doomed. If we do something, then maybe we have a chance. So it's time to infiltrate. Infiltrate these bastards and ruin them from within. Exactly what I believe. All right. Just finishes off this tape with a little bit of War of the Flea. Forward-looking, enterprising Aryans. Thus the Democratic Army is talking about the Greek insurgents. Not General Grivas, talking about the Greek communist movement in the late 1940s. Thus the Democratic Army could depend on an inviolate rear area across the border in which to establish hospitals, training camps, and supply bases. Supplies moving into Greece by two main routes, one directly from Yugoslavia and the other from Yugoslavia to Albania and then southward. The military strategy of the Greek guerrillas has been correctly defined as neither defensive nor offensive, but evasive. In short, it was the war of the flea, to nip here, fight there, and a quick retreat. The object was to bleed the army and through it the Athens government. Military objectives were subordinated to political goals by cutting communications, sowing civil disorder, increasing tax burdens, enormously disrupting the economy. Or disrupting the economic life of the country. The communists reasonably hoped to undermine the Athens regime and to create social, economic, and political pressure that would in time bring about its collapse. Now, we can go for that here. You got to ask yourself, would it be better for us to live on our feet or die on our knees? Or die on our feet than live on our knees? Tell you what, we've really developed a reputation for being cowards. We really have. And I don't say that to get under your skin or to insult anyone. I study the nigger. I really do. I study spics and their parasitical ways. You know, I often have a chance to go to some of the food pantries in Cook County. But I've also been able to take advantage of the ones out in DuPage County. It pays to have numerous sets of ID with different addresses and stuff. And I'm telling you, the people of color, the overwhelming majority of the people of color that go to these things are so arrogant. Their attitude is like, you know, give me this food. I deserve this food. It's my food. Pack my bags for me. I mean, they don't say it, but it's in their attitude. And everywhere I went, there's always been volunteers that do the parceling out of the food. But, you know, I go there and they say I'm a family of one because I'm only getting it for myself. That's how desperate times become. I got to rely on this crap. Really bothers me, too. The Mexicans go there. You know, I hear them. Oh, family of eight, family of nine, family of five. And every white person I've ever seen, any one of them, was either a family of one or a family of two at the most. I've never seen a white family more than a family of two. And you know, that's money. We're paying for the breeding of these people. They come into our lands and all they do is eat, shit, and breed. And I'm telling you right now, with what's going on in this country and how we have been betrayed, you no longer owe the United States of America anything. You don't owe them nothing. You owe them your contempt, and you owe them a fist wrapped by a metal gauntlet right across someone's jaw. Cannot go on in this life any longer being a good citizen, paying your taxes, and going along to get along. If you do not step outside the bounds of the law, it's getting to a point now where you aren't just racially ineffective, you may be borderline racial apathetic and racial treason. We got a lot of racial apathy going on. People in the struggle, all they want to do is just get on the internet and read different articles on different websites and blog about this and blog about that and get in these talk shops or these talk chat rooms, I guess. It's not doing us any bit of good. And we're out of here. Our cities will be renamed, our streets, what ones survive. A lot of cities will become uninhabitable. They won't be able to maintain them. The Asians will do all right. And who knows, maybe North America will be just one big plantation with black and brown slaves run by Asians and Arabs. Blacks and brown will be serfs for the new Asian taskmaster working those fields in Idaho so they can send potatoes and other produce to the Orient. Every white nation is being flooded with non-whites. And they get here and they have an extremely high birth rate while we stop reproducing. With all that's going on, and the treason that we have from white politicians, the apathy of white people in high places, yes, I know that the world system is very powerful and they can crush any man who rears its head against it, but you can work against the system from within without showing your face. It amazes me that ARA and these other people really go out of their way to heckle us and counter-protest against us like we have any power. We don't have any power, and they don't have any power. You think they would have enough sense to take it to the asses of people who have the power. Now, every time they have that global summit, like the one that happened in Copenhagen, you know, they got the black bloc in Germany and they, you know, protest against globalism and stuff like that. That's great. I don't mind when they do that. But they protest against us like we're part of the system. Because they see the system as fascist and we're fascist. We lose out on a lot of potential allies that we can use and exploit when we fly the standard of the swastika. It is an absurd anachronism to fly that these days. It's a beautiful symbol. It should be only for private rituals and private ceremonies. It shouldn't be on your wall in the privacy of your house or your den. If you need to hold on to stuff like that, find a place where you can cache that stuff. You guys flying banners on the wall is doing nothing to save our race. time to step out of the box. If you're not willing to do that, then you are not willing to strive for the white race. If you're not willing to do that, then you're not willing to seek a survival for white children and a future for white people. We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. You cannot do that in the bounds of the law. When you step out of bounds of the law, you need to carpe noctem. You can carpe diem. Just do that indoors. It's time for racial holy war. Racial holy war. And make part of your mental makeup shield wall and wolf heart. Shield wall says you will not be merciful or care what others feel about you.
Thank you, Sling Blade. That was very good. But like you say, I think we lost the first round bad. It's going to take some time until the blood starts flowing. But once it starts, it won't stop. What do you think about that, Igor?
Impressive.
Well, I thought it was pretty impressive, too. That's it for today. We'll be back on Moon's Day. That's right. Moon's Day, 14-5, and keep your pie hole shut. And develop lone wolves. And don't go off half-cocked. Don't think you're going to do this overnight. It's going to be a long road back, but it'll get done.
Let me tell you what it means. This means war.
needs a female or another crazed commuter on the information highway who just crashed inside your email. When I was in your part of town, I strolled around and slipped this note under your door. So when you think nobody's looking, I'm the eye that passes by you. When you think nobody's listening, I'm the listener. I'm the resistor. Sign the resistor.